Spirit Blade Underground, April 10th, 2010.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Spirit Blade Underground, April 10th, 2010.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. I'm Peter France, and the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. We're bringing you Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and unleashed on your ears and imagination. You can check out what we're doing and grab lots of cool downloads over at www.spiritblade.net. All right, let's not waste any time and jump into updates.
File access. Update. Right,
first off, you'll note that there's not been much to, if anything, to update you on this week. I've been serving on a jury in a trial that's been running for a little while now, and it's going to be ending. It should be ending this coming midweek. So my posting schedule and my work with Spirit Blade Productions and stuff, it's all pretty much been put on the back burner. But there's two things that I did want to remind you guys about. First off, the poll about the possibility of having a Spirit Blade Underground forum that we could all kind of hang out and talk about stuff on. I want to know how involved you would be on something like that if we put that together. Go over to spiritblade.net/blog. And while you're there, look at one of the recent posts about the t-shirt contest we've got going on. I've put on there the design I'm looking for in a t-shirt for Spirit Blade Productions. But I don't have the technical skills and, you know, the know-how and stuff to actually make a design work that I can then take to a print-on-demand or something like that t-shirt company online and actually make it happen. But if you participate in that and yours is one of the top three entries, then you will actually get a free t-shirt for SpiritBlade.net before anybody else gets it. So anyway, go to SpiritBlade.net/blog if you're at all artistically minded or good with just basic graphic stuff. Not even graphic design necessarily, because like I said, the design I present on there, it's a really easy concept. I just don't have much technical know-how. I barely scrape by figuring out all this audio stuff. Okay, so today we've got a retro review that's been submitted for Battlefield Earth, which I'm looking forward to sharing with you guys because I've never seen the movie, so it was a really interesting review to get. And maybe you're like me and you've been holding out because you've just heard how nightmarishly bad it is. Well, excuse me, we'll get a perspective on that today. And then also I'm going to get you updated. It's been a little while since I've looked at kind of some up-and-coming news tidbits about superhero movies and stuff like that in the media, and I got some help from listeners, and then I did a little bit of minor digging myself, and I'm going to present you with just some kind of the latest from the last month or so news regarding superhero movies and whatnot. And then, of course, we're going to be in 2 Corinthians again. That sounds like a lot, so we probably ought to get started.
Primary feature.
Movie review and information.
Activated.
Matt submitted a review, and he came up with the phrase retro review. I've been thinking about a little while of having a segment on the show that would allow for, like, reviews, like throwback reviews, or I was thinking of like holdout reviews, you know, for people that maybe have been holding out and haven't seen this movie that's been around for a couple years or maybe, you know, even a decade or so, you know, maybe you've never checked it out and have like a holdout review. But his phrase retro review that he came up with is so much more snappy and catchy that so I'm going to use that instead. But this is the first of what I hope will be many future retro reviews. Matt writes, Peter told me that he was interested in some retro reviews, so I thought I'd offer one of the most infamously bad big movies made, Battlefield Earth. I'll start with a summary of the plot. In the year 2000, cue the Conan O'Brien shtick, in the year 2000, does he still do that anymore? I don't think he does. I didn't do that. I think that's probably copyright. I actually have no idea. Let's pretend I didn't do that and just keep that on the hush-hush. Anyway, continuing. In the year 2000, mankind was conquered by the Cyclo race, 1,000 years later, humanity is all but wiped out, and Earth is being systematically raped for gold and other resources by the Cyclos. One wild human named Johnny decides to explore the larger world and see if the demons his tribe fears exist. He is captured by the Cyclos and eventually finds himself leading a rebellion to free his world. First of all, this is not a very good movie. That being said, it's not nearly as bad as some people say, either. It's no Dark Knight, but it's no Batman and Robin, either. By the way, if you don't know which of those is the good one and which is the bad one, you don't know Batman. I've never read it, but this movie is based on a novel by L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology. Though I've heard that it is supposed to have nothing to do with Scientology, some concepts like the hidden potential of the human mind and the worthlessness of religion still creep their way into the worldview of the story. My friend has read the book and claims that it's pretty good. The main flaw of the film version are the many apparent logical holes, and it seems like most of these holes are just poorly explained. Some thinking beyond what's stated and careful listening help fill some gaps, but if that's necessary, it's still not a well-made movie. Some techniques in the film are more distracting than artful. Dutch tilting, used sparingly, this is a slight angle on the camera to indicate unreality or intensity, can make a scene very effective. Think of Ethan Hunt's encounter with his boss in the 1996 Mission Impossible movie. This movie, though, Dutch tilts way too often. It looks more like bad camera work than art. The acting is probably the other major gaffe in Battlefield Earth, and there's no justifying this. Even the drunk acting is overdone, and that's saying something. Without giving away the plot too much, I would recommend Battlefield Earth if you're interested in mocking a bad movie a la Mystery Science Theater 3000 or Riff Tracks, or if you want to study how not to dramatize a novel. The story is actually not bad if you could ignore or justify the many, many logic flaws, but don't expect a great piece of cinema by a long shot. Matt, thanks for that. I think based on your review, the next time I see it's on TV, I will not automatically skip over it. I think I might, you know, it sounds like there are, you know, a few elements in it that might be worth checking out if it's free. So, I think the next time I see it on Sci-Fi when they have nothing else to run, I'll check it out. Thanks for the review. Tim O sent me a link to slashfilm.com that has a picture of Abin Sur's spaceship. Now, if you don't know who Abin Sur is, that is the Green Lantern. We're moving into comic book territory now. That's the Green Lantern that gave his ring to Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern, the main Green Lantern, I would say, of Earth. He gave it to him upon his own death. So he was dying and he landed. It's a big part of the Green Lantern, Hal Jordan's origin story. So if you go over to slashfilm.com and probably just do a little search in the search field, I'm not going to read the link to you because it's really weird and doesn't make any sense and you're not going to remember it anyway. But if you go over to slashfilm.com, and do a search for Abin Sur or something like that, you ought to be able to find it. Looks pretty cool. I mean, it's, you know, it's hard to tell in still shots, you know, comparing how it's going to look in live action. There's parts of it I'm like, okay, it looks cool. It looks like if it's not filmed right, it could look a little plasticky. But we'll see. I think the overall design, though, apart from the maybe the textures or whatever I'm sensing that might potentially be a downside, I think it's a really cool design. It's, you know, especially compared to, you know, versions of the ship that I've seen in the past. I think as time has gone on and they've retold the origin story, it's changed. And this is certainly another great update to that classic that origin concept. Let's see here. A tip from Steven C. Took me to superhero hype. Where Chris Evans has been revealed as Captain America. Chris Evans, like the Human Torch from Fantastic Four, Chris Evans. And that was really interesting for me. It was a little bit, by the time I got the info, I was out of the loop, so maybe you've known that for longer than I have, but I think that's really a really interesting casting choice. It says to me that Marvel Studios, even though, you know, they've been bought up by Disney now, that basically as an entity between Marvel and Disney, they have given up on any hope of resurrecting the Fantastic Four film franchise. Boy, say that five times. Fantastic Four film franchise. You know, but I kind of hope that they do eventually return to the Fantastic Four in film. I wouldn't mind if they did it soon, too. I think it's been long enough that if they wanted to relaunch it with a new cast and kind of recap the origin in the way they did with the more recent Incredible Hulk movie, where it wasn't an origin movie, but like in the opening credits, they kind of rehashed the origin or represented it, you know, with the new actors just through clips and stuff like that. I think they could do something like that and get us right back into the thick of a Fantastic Four film franchise. And fix a lot of the problems that we had in the first two, namely that they were just a little bit too goofy, a little bit too silly, you know? Yeah, anyway, I'm not going to get off on that. Chris Evans, though, interesting. You know, if I were to choose, I would see him just physically as looking a little bit more like a Flash. He's got a little bit more of a runner's face, if that makes any sense. You know, because runners are usually kind of lean and you know, and trimmed down, but kind of, they're not bulky. And Chris Evans doesn't strike me as kind of bulky. He's got a runner, more of a runner's physique, and certainly he's got that narrow nose. I would see more of a runner, a Wally West, or he's certainly got the attitude of Wally West, or Wally West, or he's blonde, so maybe Barry Allen, you know, depending on how you feel about that. But Captain America, I don't know. I guess the way I've seen Captain America drawn, I've seen him more bulky. You know, he tends to be more bulky than, like, say, Batman, which would be the DC Universe kind of equivalent in many ways of Captain America. So I don't know. I think it's an interesting choice. I mean, I think he's got good acting chops. I've not seen him. Well, I did see him in Cellular. That was kind of a non-wisecracking role. So, but it'll just be really interesting. I'll be very curious as to what he specifically has to bring to the role. I also learned on the superhero hype that Resident Evil Afterlife is filming right now, directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who directed the first one and has been producing all those movies since then. Really interesting. I really hope the fourth one is the last one, because they're good. They're good movies. They're not like mind-blowing movies. They're good. I've watched all of them when they've come out, or at least rented them when they came out on DVD. But they keep ending with these kind of big leave-you-hanging type cliffhangers. And for me, I kind of want to, before I buy the whole thing, I want to know that it's going to end, that they're going to figure out how to end it. It's not just going to, like, you know, end because the last movie made in the franchise sucked, you know? So I want to know that it's going to have a good, complete story, because if they're not diehard good enough in my mind, that I would get them and risk, you know, a cliffhanger ending. But so I'm wanting that franchise to end so I can collect it all. But interesting, you know, they had Extinction. What's left after Extinction? Well, Afterlife, I guess. So Resident Evil Afterlife is going to be coming out September 10th and in 3D. Which I hope they don't screw up. You know, I'm really nervous that, you know, because Avatar was a box office success, that we're going to see a lot of Clash of the Titan type maneuvers where companies who are not intending to make 3D movies do up conversions, or worst case scenario, as in my understanding of Clash of the Titans, a really hasty, badly done up conversion from 2D to 3D. So I hope these movies that I hear about coming out, like Green Lantern's another one that's going to be released in 3D. You know, I hope that they're at least filming them with 3D technology. They're doing it purposefully in advance, you know, to prep it for 3D. Otherwise, I think it's just going to be bad. And I think that, you know, 3D is just going to be overdone. And, well, yeah, I guess in the long run, I don't care, because I think 3D technology is the only thing that's getting people into theaters in the future. 5-10 years from now, I think that all movies are going to have to be 3D. They're going to have to have some kind of more immersive experience to suck viewers in. Otherwise, because home theaters are getting better and better, and I am less and less interested in, you know, shelling out major bucks for jerks that are sitting around me making noise. I don't think I talked about my Clash of the Titans experience last time. When on the last show when I reviewed it, but the focus was a little bit off compared to what I can get on my TV at home watching DVDs, you know, and it was minor, but and then, you know, just like last, I don't know, 6-9 months ago or something, we got a Blu-ray player, and I don't have many Blu-rays. I'm not, like, you know, replacing my whole collection. That's insane. But the couple that I've seen so far, already the standard at home has been raised up, and I think as the technology for TV DVDs and Blu-ray gets cheaper and cheaper, 5-10 years from now, it's going to be the standard. Everybody's going to have it. And the experience at home is getting so much more enjoyable, because if someone next to you is talking, they're probably someone that you know well enough to say, hey, can you shut up? I'm trying to watch a movie. And you can also pause the movie to say, shut up, I'm trying to watch the movie, you know? And you don't have people kicking the backs of chairs, and it was just, yeah. And the sound was doing weird things in this theater. I'm like, what the crap? What is drawing me anymore to the theater? Reviews. Reviews for you guys. I make the sacrifice for you! Anyway, all right, that was a bit of a rant I did not intend to get off on, but I don't know, box office, they're going to bite themselves in the butt if they misuse this 3D stuff. If they do it right, they will keep people in theaters for years to come. If they do it wrong, man, well, we'll just, I've already kept the 3D glasses because they said you could keep them, but I've still got my 3D glasses from Avatar, and since all these, as I understand, are encoded the same way, if they put them out on in 3D and DVD or Blu-ray, which they probably will, then I'll just wait and enjoy it at home, you know? Don't screw this up, Hollywood. You're gonna really bite yourselves in the butt. Okay, moving on. IESB reported that David Goyer, who wrote or co-wrote not Dark Knight, what's the one that came before that? Batman Begins. Yeah. I can't remember. I think he might have co-written Dark Knight 2, but I'm not sure. But I know he co-wrote Batman Begins. Well, he's writing The Man of Steel, the next shot at a Superman movie. And Jonah Nolan, the brother of Chris Nolan, who co-wrote, Batman Begins and Dark Knight, is co-writing The Man of Steel with David Goyer, and he's also possibly directing, considering that Chris Nolan is, as IESB says, godfathering the forward motion on The Man of Steel movie. Chris Nolan also may direct a Justice League movie after Man of Steel and the next Batman flick. I think that's actually a smart move on the producer's level, because if they want to unify their DC universe on screen and they want to get Christian Bale involved, Christian Bale has gone on the record before about the idea of doing a Justice League movie, or at least at the one that was being put together at the time, and he was just like not wanting any part of it, and he's like, you know, they're doing their own thing. No, that's not, you know. But if they get Chris Nolan to direct the Justice League movie, I think that would get Christian Bale. And if you get Christian Bale, and if you get Chris Nolan, who has a proven track record now for making dynamite, serious, respected superhero movies that also make tons of money, then that's going to be easier to get any other potential actors, or, you know, over, like Ryan Reynolds, to get him to play Green Lantern in a Justice League movie. That I can see that would be a draw for him, or whoever plays Superman, assuming it's not Brandon Routh, which I'm guessing at this point it's not going to be. On the whole Man of Steel front, I really enjoyed Brandon Routh's performance, so I don't have anything against his Clark Kent or his Superman, other than it wasn't Christopher Reeve, which is, you know, I really do think, you know, it's, and I don't think that's just being nostalgic. Christopher Reeve, Juilliard trained, fantastic actor, did some subtle things there in the role that Brandon Routh just didn't quite do the same, but he had a different take on it, which was very enjoyable, and so I really am not slamming Brandon Routh at all. I loved his Superman and his Clark Kent, but, you know, I think that we've got a distance ourselves. I'm sorry to say it. I think we got to distance ourselves at this point from Superman Returns and just say, okay, that was the final, just like icing on the cake of the previous Superman continuity, because it was kind of loosely connected to the previous Christopher Reeve Superman film. So, okay, let's, and clearly Bryan Singer just wanted to honor those films. And so, okay, let's make that the little end cap on that whole era of Superman films. And then I think this Man of Steel movie, we've got to start from scratch. I think we even need to tell the origin again. I think we just got to start from scratch. No, I take that back. Maybe we don't need to tell the origin. We can do the whole let's tell it during the credits thing with that too. That'd be fine. But I do think we need to start from scratch. And I don't know. It'd be very interesting if Chris Nolan ended up being the glue that kind of made all these DC movies possible. Hopefully we will hear from Geoff Johns very soon. Well, in the coming months, as he speaks at San Diego Comic-Con, he recently said of someone that asked him at WonderCon what the status of DC Hero superhero movies would be coming up. He said, I can't talk about it, but we'll talk in San Diego. So I'm very much looking forward to, I don't think I'm going to make it out to the San Diego Comic-Con. I had, as recent as a few months ago, I was thinking of making it out. I think I'm going to wait until I think I'm going to wait till next year because I think that's when they'll have a ton of like Green Lantern related stuff, and I'll really want to be on board with all that. So, but anyway, we'll see. We'll see. I'm gonna keep my ears peeled for whatever we can learn from Geoff Johns, who's kind of manning all of the DC conversion into film type projects. So stay tuned, and we can all hope for the best.
I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of at least of these brothers of mine, you did for me.
Critical Press Media's first benefit project for 2010 will be part of Compassion 365, the year-long campaign by the Christian New Media Group to raise awareness and funds for Compassion International. We are looking for original fiction by new and upcoming authors with a passion for emotional storytelling, thought-provoking and well-reasoned essays where critical reasoning is brought to bear on the topic, and riveting news articles documenting the impact of suffering on humanity and the efforts of individuals and relief organizations. The passage in Matthew defines six states of being wherein an act of compassion, performed as ministry to another, is actually service rendered to the Lord. Hunger, thirst, alienation, vulnerability, sickness, and imprisonment. A manuscript ideally suited to the project will treat one of these conditions as a central element or theme and demonstrate the effect of these conditions both on the afflicted and their deliverer. More information on this project may be found in the submission information section at criticalpressmedia.com. More information about Compassion 365 may be found at compassion365.com.
The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word about God stands forever.
Today we're searching for truth in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 23, and we're going through chapter 9, verse 5. Let me read this to you from the New International Version. It says, "As for Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker among you. As for our brothers, they are representatives of the churches and an honor to Christ. Therefore, show these men the proof of your love and the reason for our pride in you, so that the churches can see it. There is no need for me to write to you about this service to the saints, for I know your eagerness to help. And I have been boasting about it to the Macedonians, telling them that since last year you and Achaia were ready to give, and your enthusiasm has stirred most of them to action. But I am sending the brothers in order that our boasting about you in this matter should not prove hollow, but that you may be ready, as I said you would be. For if any Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to say anything about you, would be ashamed of having been so confident. So I thought it necessary to urge the brothers to visit you in advance and finish the arrangements for the generous gift you had promised. Then it will be ready as a generous gift, not as one grudgingly given." The trip to facilitate the safeguard and to facilitate and safeguard the gift from the Corinthian church to the suffering Jerusalem Christians was a joint effort. Kind of like a parachurch ministry, if you will. The group traveling to Corinth for this purpose included a representative of Paul, Titus, and two other unnamed men who were chosen by several churches and by Paul. Look at verse 23 of chapter 8. "Paul urged the Corinthians to demonstrate their love through action toward the visiting men so that none of the churches who would hear a report from the man they sent would doubt their sincere generosity." I'm looking at verse 24 there. Paul knew that in all this talk about giving, he was preaching to the choir, as it's stated, and which I think is a funny statement as a side note. In my personal experience, sometimes the choir can use some preaching too. But anyway, he knew how the Corinthians felt and that they wanted to give. Look at chapter 9, verse 1. "The Corinthian church had previously led the charge in giving to the suffering Jerusalem Christians." Look at verse 2 of chapter 9. "But Paul also knew it was important that they follow through and not appear slow or reluctant now that their previous initiative had inspired others to give. So Paul sent these men not to strong arm or pressure the Corinthians and the nearby churches in Achaia that this letter also circulated to." That's why Achaia is mentioned, because this letter was also circulated to them. Not in the strictest sense, this is not just to the Corinthians, but they were the chief recipients of this letter. So he didn't send these guys to strong arm or pressure the Corinthians and the other nearby churches, but to help them follow through with what they had committed to. Look at verse 3. In ancient Greco-Roman culture, during this time period, I thought this was interesting when I read this, there was tremendous emphasis on obtaining honor and in avoiding shame. Paul had staked his reputation on the Corinthians by boasting about them. Look at verse 4. He was ultimately only interested in his standing before God, but he likely cared about the impact his own shame might have on his teaching and the gospel message. And you might remember from last week, we did look at the word gospel and define that. So if you need a refresher, jump back to last week's notes on the definition of gospel. Paul didn't want any shame that he experienced to negatively impact the gospel as he was presenting it. With this in mind, Paul urged Titus and the other two men to go and help facilitate the collection and transport of the gift to make the work efficient and the experience fulfilling for the Corinthians instead of being, you know, drudgery. Look at verse 5. These verses, I think, are an example of what Christian relationships can and should be. The Corinthians were inspired and they set a high goal for themselves, and then other Christians became involved to encourage them and help them move forward with their goals after their initial kind of mountaintop experience. That's what Paul was doing there. Next week, we're going to take a look at what helps us give and what keeps us from giving. And the coffeehouse question this week, do you have a Christian relationship in your life in which you can openly share your personal goals for growth and maturity? If so, who is that? And if not, who might you be able to develop this kind of relationship with? And that's maybe the second part of that, is just something for you to kind of think about and consider. For me, I think I've talked about him once before, but there's a guy named David Lindstrom. He's one of the elders at our church, and he has his master's in divinity, and he is fluent in Greek and Hebrew. He's just a scholar and a great man that I look up to. And I meet with him about every... well, as much as we can. We try to meet every 2 weeks, but sometimes schedules permitting, it's closer to once a month, but most often about every 2 weeks. And so he's someone that I'll kind of share my thoughts, my goals, my just kind of the stuff I'm puzzling through in my walk as I try to figure out what Scripture's saying, you know. But you know what? As I've thought about this question this week, I realized, you know, I've not been maybe as open with him and vulnerable and transparent with him as I could be. So Dave, if you're listening, I'm going to commit to trying to be more transparent and share more of myself and put more of myself on the line a little bit and expose a little bit more of my vulnerability and my weaknesses in the areas I want to grow in. Because I really think that's vital, and it's not always easy. Sometimes it's wonderful because you get that encouragement from others. And, you know, once you get the ball rolling, I've experienced in my life, once you get that ball rolling of sharing and kind of letting people know where you're at and where you want to be, it's really encouraging. It's a source of energy, but kind of getting that ball started or elevating the level to which you are involved within a relationship with somebody in that way, it can be difficult at first, but very rewarding, and I think that we see that modeled in the Bible. I've already gotten one response to this question from Drew R., who wrote, "What a good question, Peter. I do have that kind of relationship. I have a close circle of friends, nearly all of whom are fellow volunteer middle school leaders and the actual middle school ministry pastor. We frequently get together, sometimes in one-on-one settings, sometimes as our larger group of brothers in Christ, and hold each other accountable to our readings, study of the Word, daily living of the Christian walk, and presenting ourselves to the world as Christians. Our middle school ministry pastor, a middle school kid in a 40-year-old's body, constantly encourages us to continue to grow, and his favorite phrase, marinate in God's Word." I like that phrase, by the way. It's this kind of encouragement that I constantly keep in mind in my daily search for the truth. Thanks, Drew. So hopefully, maybe something in what I've shared or what Drew has shared is kind of brought to mind someone in your life, maybe that you can kind of connect with and kind of have an ongoing dialogue about spiritual matters, about your life. That's really what it's about. I'd love to hear if you have somebody that you're already kind of doing that with. I'd love to hear about that. You can email me at paeter@spiritblade.net, or leave me a message I can play on the podcast. Call 206-350-1226. I got an email from Mark this week who says, I found Dark Tower Book 1 to be really hard going. It was worth the fight, though, as subsequent books were easier. I don't know if that's because I was then familiar with the language or it was intentionally written easier. Giving. I find it easier to give when I'm connected with the recipient. A friend going through a tough time, I can slip some their way, make things a little easier. A church or a ministry where I care about someone involved in it, more inclined to help. Random person on the street trying to get me to sign up to regularly give to a charity I know little about, not going to happen. A charity that's advertising on TV. Why are they spending money on TV advertising? Doesn't that take away from their work? In the passage where the church gave money to the church in Jerusalem, they had a personal connection. They knew people who've at least been there and could easily identify with the struggles. Also not inclined to give to anything where the government is already giving my money to them without my having a say. At that point, there's no incentive to care or give. The nanny state kills generosity. I think you bring up some really good points there. I wonder if some people find it... I'd be interested in kind of getting more perspective on that. This is not an official Coffee House question, but if there's some folks out there who find it easier to give to a faceless organization that they trust, they've come to trust how they operate and what they do with their funds, is that easier? Or is giving to a person, a flesh and blood person that's in your life, is that easier? That would be an interesting thing to kind of see where people fall on that. As far as like the advertising on TV thing, I definitely see where you're coming from there. I'm not sure. I'd have to kind of, I guess, sit down and with each kind of charity on a case-by-case basis and see if I get a sense of if they're spending their money well, because there's certainly opportunity for, where making a commercial could be an investment that they would get a much bigger return on, because they're getting the word out about their charity or the need that's out there to many more people than they could have. And so it could be one of those things where it's kind of there's an investment, a little bit of investment where they could really make some big forward strides. So I don't know. But I can also see how that, you know, that money can be spent irresponsibly in some of those areas. You know, I mean, I don't think you buy Super Bowl time to have people give to needy children necessarily. I don't know. I guess I'd have to be a business economics guy to see the stats and how all that stuff works. But yeah, so I'd have to sit down and talk numbers with a guy that runs a charity to see if that's money well spent or not. Interesting point, though. Let's see here. What else? The thing about not being inclined to give anything where the government has already given your money away, and the nanny state kills generosity. I think there's a good point there too. We're kind of between a rock and a hard place, though, aren't we? Because I would venture to say that there are many Christians that fall on the side of kind of being conservative politically, who would be against the nanny state, and I don't consider myself a hyper conservative or anything like that, but or really extreme. I'm not very political to begin with, so I don't even know. You'd have to send me a survey so I could find out where I sit, you know, in the right and left and all that business. But I'm not into the nanny state, as depending on how you define that, you know, that kind of ultra, like, we're going to take care of everything and we're going to tax you for it and just decide how your money is spent and what charities are worth giving money into and stuff like that. So I think there's definitely a good point there. But it's interesting. I can't help but wonder if a lot of Christians who... and I don't sense this from you, Mark, so don't read this the wrong way. But I wonder if there's a lot of Christians out there who are not willing to... They hate the nanny state, and they're like, no, I want to choose where I give, da-da-da-da, and they're like, down, down, nanny state, and they're really against that, but then they don't actually get involved with the ministries that are sitting in front of them that they could very well give to. You know, it's... I've discovered that it's really easy sometimes to kind of use the in my life to use the Bible. It's very tempting to use the Bible as a smokescreen and say some things that sound really nice and sound really good, but then I don't follow through with that principle in my private life, where nobody can see and nobody can know. But in reality, I'm failing. Even though I'm holding up the words of Scripture, I'm kind of failing in that regard. So I've really been finding this conversation interesting, guys. So I hope you'll keep sending me your thoughts on giving as we're covering it in the book of 2 Corinthians. Next week, I'm not sure if there will be a show or not. I know that I'm not going to be able to see Kick-Ass. I'm going to be leaving to visit my sister for a week. So I know for sure in 2 weeks there will not be a show. As for next weekend, I'm going to try and get the show out early, like on Thursday night. But if it's not out on Thursday night, it's not going to happen. And I'll try, if it's not going to happen, I'll try to put a post up there just to let you know, hey, guys, sorry, no show this week. But I'm not sure what the content's going to be for next week's show, because, like I said, I'm not going to be able to see Kick-Ass like I had hoped to. But I want to thank everybody who sent me tips and stuff, you know, geek-related stuff that I could share on the podcast this week. This was another kind of a dry week, because I've been really busy at this trial and whatnot, and so I was like, oh, crap, what am I going to talk about? So if you have anything you want to send me, it's been really helpful to me this week to get stuff from you guys. So I should have more time to kind of find stuff on my own this week, but I would really value it if you had something that you think would be interesting to put out there on the show, and I'll be happy to share that. Like I said, send it my way, PAETER at spiritblade.net or 206-350-1226. Thanks a lot, guys. I hope you have a great week. And you know what? When you think of me, you can pray for me in this whole trial thing. We're in deliberations right now, and I think this is a wonderful opportunity for me to really apply everything that that I've been applying to my own spiritual walk for a number of years now. I get to apply it as part of the justice system, and I'm really looking forward to just exercising biblical principles of truth seeking. So when you think of me this week, you can pray that I will effectively seek the truth.
Visit www.spiritblade.net. Peter is a crazy freak. Green Lantern is awesome. Visit www.spiritblade.net.